Hello, I'm Kerry Harriman from Berwick Secondary College. As part of my Year 12 history option for 1991, for whom my teacher is Mr. Hanson, I'm interviewing Mrs. Morris from the Berwick and Beaconsfield Red Cross Society. I'll leave you now to travel down the historical path of the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield Red Cross Society.
Mrs. Morris, when did you join the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield branch of the Red Cross Society? And what was your motivation for becoming a member?
Well, my husband had joined up during the war, and I joined the Red Cross to do what I could ever since 39.
Right. What work was involved in the early years of the Red Cross Society up until approximately 1945?
Well, we collected monies when we went out around the countryside. We made pyjamas and rolled bandages, had little fundraising things, not very, very much, but we did have sort of evenings or afternoons where people came and perhaps paid a shilling or 2 shillings to, you know, go into the, to join in with the fun that we were having.
How was fundraising organised in the early days of the Red Cross? Was there one person appointed to do it?
Well, usually the president and treasurer made the effort to organise the thing, and then the members filled in.
Right. Did you receive much support from the population in such fundraisers?
We got wonderful support. In the 30s to about 30 or to the 40s, things were very bad, and the people here didn't have a great deal of money. But I can remember on one occasion collecting at a farmhouse, and the woman had 6 halfpennies that she'd saved to give to us for Red Cross. And I thought this was a wonderful thing, because they grew their own vegetables and did what they could to support themselves, but money wasn't coming in. You know, I really do think it was a much worse time than it is at present.
Right. Why do you think this response from the public regarding fundraising was so... Why do you think people were like that, so generous?
Well, because I think they felt that Red Cross would always support them in whatever they needed. You know, if there was a bushfire or a house fire, Red Cross always came to the front with clothes and food to see them over the worst of the time. And I think they realised that although Red Cross doesn't advertise a great deal, they do a wonderful job.
Right. Do you believe the general public's attitude towards supporting fundraising for the Red Cross has improved in recent years?
Yes, I think it has, because I think that even by word of mouth, Red Cross, the good that Red Cross does has spread, and people know that they can rely on their help if they need it.
Right. How has the amount of membership been affected over the years?
Membership has gone off a great deal, because since the war years, the young marrieds are going to work rather than staying home. When I was first married, it would have been impossible to have gone to work. You had to stay home. It was a thing that had crept into the tradition of life. But then during the war years, when lots of girls, their husbands were abroad, and so they did probably the work they'd done before, they went into the workforce, and then after that it became a commonplace thing. Most of the young girls today that marry go into their old job or to another one. And so we haven't got any young members. Most of the members of the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield branch, I would say, were over 70.
Yeah.
Up to two of us are well over 85. So you see, we're old. The young ones are not coming in so much. I believe that at Harkaway, they've got a younger married group who meet at night. Of course, we meet in the daytime, which means that the girlies that go to work can't come.
Right. Did the intensity of the work of the Red Cross Society change in any way after approximately 1945?
Oh yes, I think they do. They do a great deal more individual work. They, for instance, what do they call it? Medical loans. This has increased tremendously. In the football season, they let out, well, dozens and dozens of pairs of crutches for boys that have sprained their ankle or hurt their knees or, you know, had some fall in football. They have wheelchairs, all sorts of things for home nursing that you needn't go to the chemist and pay a great deal for hire. You can go to Red Cross. They don't charge, but they're always glad of a donation. And so probably people could have a wheelchair for, well, maybe 3 weeks or a month. And if they haven't got the money, if they give $2, well, we welcome it. I don't think we're a begging organisation. We're always glad of donations. And there is a bit of a difference.
Right. When I was talking about the intensity, I was wondering that after the wars had finished, that the Red Cross wasn't as busy as it was first was. Would you agree with that?
No, I don't think we were as busy, but we spread our interests into other things. I don't know whether you know about the Red Cross transport in the city. I was a member there for 10 years, from 45 until 52 when I moved to Adelaide. And they go and collect children or adults and take them from their home to the hospital, from hospital back to home. They have no worries about fees or anything else. Red Cross does this for them. And if there was a bushfire, for instance, there were several of us that had licenses to drive a 29-passenger bus. In the good times, we took the bus, we took returned soldiers from Melbourne down to Sorrento, where they had a rest home. But in bushfire days, we used to load the bus up with food, particularly almost always tinned food, and we took it up and fed the fighters from the Red Cross, from the local fire brigades that were attacking the fire in the hills. And I thought this was a wonderful thing. When I went to Adelaide, I joined up Red Cross there, and they had a bushfire in the hills. And I was astounded. I was given the lorry to drive, well, that was fine. But then they had loaded it with ice chests. And I don't know whether you remember, but ice chests were pretty big things, much more than I could carry. But there was I on the lorry with these ice chests that we were going to take off to people that had been either burnt out or semi-burnt out, and how was I going to get them off? And I tell you, we had some screamingly funny things that happened with the ice chest. We'd get them onto their side and then we'd get it up again, and most of them had been loaded with ice in Adelaide so they would be cool. And we came home a very tired and splattered lot, I tell you.
What is your general impression of how the Red Cross has changed over the years?
Well, I think they've improved. Sometimes I hear things about their central office that rather makes me sad, because apparently they have quite a number of young people who don't realise the worth of voluntary workers. Now, I think that the voluntary people do a wonderful job. Maybe that's because I was one, but I really do think they do a wonderful job. They're asked to go in, say, at 7:30 in the morning to go for a trip to Williamstown or Northwood or wherever, and they're there on time. All the time that I worked for Red Cross, I never knew a voluntary worker to be late. They were really wonderful. And I don't see why they're not the same now. But I had a sister who did voluntary work in at the head office, and she said she was often alarmed at the disdain, really, that often the girls that had paid jobs and were behind the desk treated the voluntary workers as if they were not much good at all. And I felt this was a sad thing, because I think really and truly Red Cross does depend on voluntary workers a great deal. They, you know, they do a wonderful job, I think. But maybe I'm prejudiced.
Oh, I think they do. I would like to thank you very much for this interview. It's been a great help.
Well, you know, I'm only too willing to help, but as I say, I'm a bit old and fusty and not as good as I could be.
Oh, you've been great. Thank you very much.
Good.
Mrs. Morris was a great priority source for my history option due to extensive work with the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield Red Cross Society beginning in 1939. Through Mrs. Morris, I've learned that after the wars, our local units still worked at the same relatively high intensity, but spread their interest into different areas. This view has also been reinforced with my interviews with both Mrs. Wimsley and Mrs. Phillips. For both these interviews, I took down written notes. The views of these capable women has led me to refuting my hypotheses of the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield Red Cross Group started out of the desperate need to help the community during World War I and is now more of a social group. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my interview. I hope you found it both informative and interesting, thus broadening your information on the Berwick Upper Beaconsfield Red Cross Society. Thank you.